Support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, holding a Welcome Back food tasting for returning students, faculty, and residents on Saturday, August 28th. Featured will be more than 100 international food items, including cheeses, olives, breads, chocolates, and more. World Harvest Foods, at the intersection of 6th and University Avenue, Champaign.
Enter the WILL sweepstakes today and you could win a widescreen, high-definition TV from Champaign Audio, a shaker-style table and stools from Boxes and Boards, a Pfaff sewing machine from So Sassy, or artwork from Billy Morrow Jackson and City Mariah Jackson. And if your entry is postmarked by August 19th, you'll be eligible to win the Early Bird Prize, $500 worth of colorful plants and shrubs for your garden from Country Arbors. To request an entry form, call 217-333-0850.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're pleased to have back here on the program Dr. Robert Bojack. He's a pediatrician. He's been with us monthly for quite a while to do a show on children's health. And back, in the dim and distant past, we thought, what sort of things would people always have questions about we could do every month? And children's health was one of those. So we built it into the schedule so you would have this regular opportunity once every month to talk about your kids. And whatever questions you might have, I know he'll do his best to help you out. Any of the kinds of things that you could imagine discussing with a pediatrician, we've talked about. All kinds of wellness and illness issues and vaccinations and diet kind of stuff, behavioral things. We've talked about kids who have problems sleeping, and we've talked about, just about anything you can imagine. And all of that is fair here on the program if you want to call in. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And at any point here, if you have questions, you can call us. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
We're now seem to be moving slowly but steadily, I guess, into the other peak of the allergy season. We got one earlier in the spring where some people have trouble. Then we've got one now in the late summer. Some people have trouble. And some people have trouble both times. Is there anything that's particularly new that we can offer to folks who really are miserable because of their allergies this time of year?
No.
Well, that's the answer to that question.
And I think we still have the basic over-the-counter antihistamines, and I think that's a good place to start. The advantage of the over-the-counter antihistamines is they're usually inexpensive. The disadvantage is they aren't the newer, fancier ones, so you may have more sedation with them. They may make you a little sleepier. And then you can move up to the ones that don't cross the CNS. So don't cause sedation. I think Seldane was the first one out, and I don't think Seldane's around anymore, but the Claritins and those sorts of things are there. The advantage of those are they, again, don't sedate. The disadvantage is they may not be quite as effective as the old antihistamines, but efficacy seems to be in the eyes of the taker. What works well for one person may not work as well for another person. There's the inhaled steroids, the nasal steroids, the steroid nasal sprays. And then there's the leukotriene inhibitors that you see advertised on TV. And what these do is they work in a different way from the antihistamines. They block the reaction of the histamine reaction, so they work in a little different way. So there's all those things to try. And then there's the old desensitization shots, the skin testing to see what you're allergic to. And this time of year, it's probably going to be giant ragweed. And there's the desensitization shots. But I don't think there's anything – I can't think of anything that's
– nothing really
wasn't
new
available
and stupid
last year. Yeah.
One of the things that I'm sure that we've talked about when it comes to allergies is the question of testing and whether – how important it is that you know what it is that people are allergic to. And if, for example, you do your allergy problems seem to be seasonal and that they come at the right times, then maybe you can say, well, chances are that it is ragweed.
Yeah.
Or it could be tree pollen or, you know, the sorts of things that you have earlier in the springtime. Or if any time that you get around a cat, you have a problem, that's a pretty good sign that that's what it is. But there may be other cases. I don't know. Are there other cases where you think it's worth going through this business where they take all these things and they scratch your skin and then they wait a little while and see what it looks like to try to figure out specifically what it is?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly if you have seasonal allergies, and certainly if they're not life-threatening allergies, you know, if you have shellfish allergies, you probably don't want to be scratch tested anyway, because what they're scratch testing with is a little bit of the antigen that they think you're allergic to. And if you're super sensitive to peanuts or shellfish, you probably don't want to be scratch test, because that might throw you into an anaphylactic reaction. But I think basically with all the different different types of medications we have out there now, probably try one of those first, and scratch testing would probably be, again, reserved for those people who don't get much relief from those, or unsatisfactory relief from those, who want to go on to desensitization shots. But I think, yeah, I guess that would be the fourth or fifth line of defense to bother with the scratch testing.
When the kind of increased immunity that you would get if you get the kind of shots, is that something that is long-lasting, or do periodically, does that have to be renewed?
In theory, you'd get desensitized for 3 months, or 3 years, and then the course of therapy is done, and supposedly it shouldn't need to be renewed. Yeah. And the other advantage of people who are getting to the golden years, or the silver years, whichever you want to say, as we get older, our immune system tends to lose its impact a bit, and allergies tend to get milder as we get older.
Because I guess that's what it's kind of an overreaction of your immune system. So if your immune system gets sort of tired out, then that might actually be one beneficial thing of having your immune system not function. Are there other problems that come with having your immune system maybe not functioning as well as it did before? But maybe you can find one positive thing there.
But yeah, basically for allergies, I think we're pretty much the same old. Yeah. Nothing new. And you know, again, I think steroids, well, especially when you get to asthma, we used to define asthma as a reversible constrictive airway disease. It was all muscle thing. Muscles in the airways, when the allergen hit or whatever triggered your asthma hit, the muscles went into spasm, the airways narrowed down. And now it's not defined as that anymore. Now it's defined as a chronic inflammatory disease. So I think steroids have gone way up in use in asthma. And I think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread as far as asthma treatment is concerned, the inhaled steroids. And they seem to be very, very safe. They're still looking at, does it cause growth suppression? Does it interfere with the adrenal axis? Like oral steroids do, and the evidence seems to be, if it does, and some studies are showing that it does so minimally that there's probably nothing that we can measure out. We can measure it chemically, biochemically, but we can't measure anything as far as, well, maybe kids don't grow as well when they're on inhaled steroids for the first few months they're on it. Then they show catch-up growth, and we don't think that in the long run, we're shortchanging these kids' height at all. And, the inhaled steroids, especially for asthma, have been a real, real blessing and something that shouldn't be avoided and should be encouraged.
And you don't, with inhaled steroids, you don't get some of the negative side effects that you do when people take oral, the kind that when you swallow the pill, it's a different, when you inhale that, it doesn't get that whole body effect.
That's right. These tend to be so-called first-pass detoxified. First time they go through the liver, they're disabled. So they don't have any, or they have very minimal systemic effect, and they seem to be quite safe that way. I think the other thing that's come along for asthma is, we do use a lot more oral steroids, short-burst, high-dose oral steroids. And again, if you're using short-burst, high-dose, again, you don't seem to have any long-term systemic effects like you do with long-term steroids. So I think, there's nothing new out there now this year, I don't think, but I think since in my career we've come a long ways in the treatment of allergies and especially asthma that has increased over the years. I'm not sure anybody's exactly sure why. We've got some reasons, but it's certainly very nasal allergies are, oh gosh, you know, you can live with them. You'd rather live without them, their discomfort. Asthma certainly is life-limiting and sometimes life-threatening and needs to be vigorously treated.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think a couple of times here on the program we've talked with a guest who works over at McKinley and who works with college students. And one of the points that she's made sort of over and over again that she wants to get across to people is that we now have a lot of really good treatments for asthma and that people don't have to suffer and don't have to make some of the compromises maybe in how they live their lives that people had in the past. You can still be active. You can still be involved in sports. You can pretty much do whatever you want and that if you use what is the best, most recent kind of way of treating it, and you know it's possible to live quite successfully even though that you have asthma,
and you know asthma if poorly treated and it becomes chronic, the inflammatory changes in the lungs aren't acute. They don't come and go. They tend to cause chronic lung disease in the long run. So we do want to treat asthma vigorously to prevent that. And again, like you said, we do want asthmatics to have a normal, enjoyable life and play football or golf or swim or be in the Olympics or whatever.
Yeah. Our guest here this morning is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician and is on the program every month, always on a Thursday, the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about children's health. We've been doing that for a long time. Questions are certainly welcome if you'd like to talk with him. As I said at the beginning, anything you could think of asking a pediatrician, you can ask him and he'll see what he can do for you. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455.
I read an interesting article recently on the foreign adoption, adopting children from foreign countries.
From outside the United States.
Yeah, from outside the United States. And I think this is something that's done more and more recently because, the adoptive babies in the United States, just the numbers aren't there to meet the demand. Partly because our teenage pregnancy rate is as low as it's been since the 1940s or so, which is good. But I think basically the sum total of this article was buyer beware when you do foreign adoption. Get as much information about this child as you can. Talk with your pediatrician. Have your pediatrician or family doctor help you out as much as possible. Videotapes are often available, and review the videotape with your physician to see if this child seems to have normal appearance and showing normal development for age. Go through the medical records that she obtained. The other thing this article said is that, like in Russia, the Russian physician regards pregnancy as a stressful, dangerous time, so all these babies are labeled at risk. And I forget the exact terminology, so you have to kind of sort through what the doctors in the different countries mean by a particular term they use. And, go in this very carefully and do as much research as you can. And the other thing they said is see if you can adopt your baby as young as possible in early infancy, because unfortunately the orphanages in many of these countries feed the children well, but they're very overworked, so the children don't get as much psychological nurturing and people contact. And I think we don't know really well how long they can go without good social contact before we may see some permanent damage there. I think the other thing about especially the Asian countries in that we have a lot more risk of AIDS, HIV infection, and the other thing that's a big concern is the fetal alcohol syndrome. Some of those babies clearly have stigmata and a picture will be somewhat diagnostic or certainly suggestive of but many of the babies with fetal alcohol syndrome don't show physical stigmata, so that picture won't be diagnostic. And I know of many people who have had a very pleasant experience and have gotten just great joy from the children they've got. And I've heard of a few families where things weren't quite so successful, and there's problems with the child.
Okay. So get as much information as you possibly can, and get a pediatrician. If you don't have a pediatrician, yeah, get one and get them into the process and see what they can tell you. Okay. Questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. Apparently, we had someone call in who was associated with one of the schools here in the area, and just would like to remind parents that heading back to school here, kids need to make sure that they have their physicals done in time, and particularly that their immunizations are up to date. What is it that the schools require in terms of immunization, and does that, are there certain mileposts at which by this point you need to have all the stuff, and then by this point you need to make sure you have boosters on these things?
Yeah. Kindergarten need a measles, a DPT, and a polio, a booster. If you've been getting regular checkups with your physician, you should be okay. But yeah, if you're calling for a physical exam for school right now,
you might have a problem.
It probably ain't going to get done in time. And I think the other thing is prepare your children. You know, if this is their first year in school, their kindergarten year, or they're going to a new school, middle school or high school, you know, kind of prepare them as best you can, particularly the kindergartners. Make sure that they have their supplies, the supplies that are necessary. And most importantly, take them to school. Show them the route to school or the route to the bus stop, and go through street crossing safety things. And if they're going to take a bike to school, make sure they have a bike helmet and make it an enjoyable experience for them.
Since now for some time now, I'm sure that the kids who are going to kindergarten have been in some kind of daycare. So they're used to the idea that they're going to be away from parents for some part of the day, and someone's going to take them someplace and leave them there, and they're going to be there with other kids, and there'll be activities and whatnot. And then there are rules, and they're expected to follow and do certain things. If you have a child who's had that experience already, is going to kindergarten so much of a change?
You know, I don't think so. Although I really haven't seen any studies published about, are we seeing less school avoidance, school phobia than we used to see? And I suspect we are, because, most kids have had either a daycare or a preschool experience. And I think these kids are, they're not doing anything new. They're just doing it in a different building. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, I haven't talked to any teachers, and I haven't seen anything published about that. But I suspect the transition is much easier.
Maybe a little bit easier. I'm sure at the same time that there are still feelings of transitions, and that there are times when the child, he or she, does have this feeling that something is really changing here, and they may be unsure of what the expectations are, what it is that their teachers will expect them to know on the very first day when they get there. Or, I'm sure that there are always things that are new and that can make you a little anxious, because you're not sure, okay, what's the drill here? What's the program? What are the rules? What are we going to do? What are they going to expect of me? And that there's always opportunities I'm sure a lot of parents have seen that from a transition from one grade to the other, when the parent is thinking, well, this is no big, you were in third grade and now you're going to the fourth grade, and you're going to the same school, and you have friends, and what's the big deal? And that some parents sometimes might be kind of blindsided with a child that seems to have some anxieties where you wouldn't think that there would be, because you say, well, what's the big, there's nothing really, from your perspective, nothing has changed.
And the transition from third to fourth grade or first to second grade, that sort of stuff, as long as they're in elementary school, isn't a big deal, because they know the teacher that they're going to have by reputation, or they've seen her in lunchroom or playground recess supervision, that probably the next big transition where you will see some school avoidance flare up again is middle school. Fifth to sixth grade or sixth to seventh, depending if you're middle school or junior high. And again, you may have some transition problems again as they go to high school. But usually once if they're in the same school building, you usually won't have any major problems with them.
What would you if you were what is it that you expect to see? Is it just people kids saying, "Well, I don't feel well," or that what are they going to tell you, and how much detective work are you going to have to do to figure out what really is going on?
Usually kids love to grab their stomach. If something's going wrong, I've got a tummy ache, or I've got to throw up, or something like that, or they'll just cry a lot and just don't want to go to school. And the recommendation is that they go to school. They go there, they can sit in a nurse's office, whatever, the principal's office or the dean's office or whatever, but they don't come home. They may not have to go to the class, or you make some deals that way, but they stay in school. And usually within a few days they'll say, okay. When I get home again, mom's there, the house is there, tornado hadn't come, nothing terrible has happened, and, this school isn't such a bad deal, I'm making some friends, and usually, for the most part, they don't need any extra medical or psychological attention. Most of them will say, this is okay, this is cool, I'm having fun.
Okay. We're about midway through this part of Focus 580, and certainly if people who are listening have questions, you can call. Talk with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician. He's on the program once a month, always a Thursday. We talk about children's health. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL, which I'm sure does not make it any easier. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Something that we've certainly seen more and more of over the last, I don't know how many years, decades or something, kids who... it seems that we've started to think differently about emotional difficulties and stress in children. And we've acknowledged the fact, at least more than we ever have before, that children can experience depression and they can experience anxiety. And that for better or worse, what we seem to be doing is in putting increasing numbers of children on medication. Same kind of medications that adults who have those problems take. It's maybe the total numbers of children are not enormous, but the percentage increases, when you look at it that way, they are, and it has gone up quite a lot. And I know that within the medical community, there's some controversy and a lot of debate about, is it a good thing to put small children on antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications? And then that's something I'm sure that over the time that you have been a pediatrician has changed a lot. I don't imagine when you started out, you had very many children who were taking, well, they didn't have Prozac, but, you wouldn't have had that many kids on medicines like that. And
we didn't even, attention deficit disorder. Those kids were usually 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old boys. Now they're 5-year-old boys that are referred, some girls, but mostly boys. Mm-hmm. And depression we didn't see, didn't recognize. And I'm not sure what the correct answer is there. And there's a lot of concern. A lot of these drugs have off-label uses. They haven't been studied in children, and I think most of you are aware that there's debate out there whether they should be used, whether the suicide rate's up and that sort of thing. And I guess the other question, maybe the more important question we have to ask, is not should Prozac be used or not, but why are we seeing an increase in depression or, psychological problems in kids? And are we doing something, I kind of have a feeling that maybe we are asking our kids for stuff that they just developmentally aren't designed to do at their age. Should Johnny read be reading ready when he starts kindergarten? And I think the answer is, you know, Sally's probably reading ready, but there's a good percentage of the Johnnies that are just, you know, we guys are a little slower than girls. And if you expect Johnny to read when he's not developmentally able to read, and you're yanking him around and putting him in special classes and that sort of stuff, are we putting an unusual stress on Johnny? Or the occasional Sally who's a little behind with Johnny, too. Are we putting an unusual stress on these kids, and are we creating emotional problems with them? And do we need to study what Prozac does in kids, but do we need to see what we're reanalyze what we're doing to kids in school and maybe making some changes there, and maybe making our expectations of kids a little bit more realistic in some instances and relieve the stress from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think that it actually, you know, as a society, it's not that we're completely comfortable in talking about mental health issues, but we do talk about them more than we used to.
Yeah.
And it is probably, even though there's still some stigma attached with that, maybe we're a little bit, if you feel that you're having emotional problems, we're a little bit more likely to say so, at least maybe go to our doctors and talk about that. So it's something we're more willing to talk about. And because we're talking about it more, then you get to this question, well, is there more of it, or are we just talking about it more? And then I wonder, as it filters down to children, I mean, do you really think that children are experiencing more stress and more anxiety and more emotional difficulties than they did 40 years ago? Or some of that is that, I don't know if we're looking for it, if we're more likely to talk about it, to ask questions about it?
I think we're looking for it more. But I also think we're more accepting of it. A diagnosis of a mental illness is sort of my red badge of courage. You know, the fact that I'm on Prozac or whatever, Paxil or whatever's out there is, okay, hey, yeah, I'm on it. And, you know, I've got a bio. And now I think the other thing is these are biochemical disorders. There's nothing wrong. Yeah, there's no trauma with my parent. You know, it's cool. It's a biochemical disorder. And I think the other thing that's come along with this is if it's a biochemical disorder, it gets a biochemical treatment. It gets a medication, and I think it gets less psychotherapy, less, you know, let's talk this out and let's see where the problem really is, and let's see if we can alter things and relieve whatever stress this child's appreciating and maybe fix it that way without a chemical. But I think we're more accepting of psychological diagnosis, and there's not as much stigma. And, you know, again, that's good, but it may have its negative impact, too.
Yeah. Are there enough psychologists or counselors or, you know, whatever, people around who specialize in dealing with children to meet whatever demand there is?
Yeah, I can't answer that. I think in this town, it's come in Champaign-Urbana, it's coming up. But I think there's another problem here. Is the insurance companies, will they adequately cover?
Will they pay for it? Yeah. And I think that's a frequent concern that's been raised,
yeah,
particularly going back to the issue that you're talking about before. That is, if we have people that whose health care, if they're in some kind of managed care situation, and they have emotional problems and they're looking for some counseling, you know, what there are limits on how many sessions with a therapist they can have.
And I think the other problem that causes me some concern is primary care docs are now prescribing these medications. And often psychologists, psychiatrists are not involved at all. And I'm not sure that the non-psychiatrist has adequate training in using these drugs. And I'm not sure at all that drug therapy alone is the way to go. In fact, I feel pretty strongly that, all right, drug therapy is often very helpful to these people, but I think counseling is psychotherapy. Counseling, couch sessions are part of the treatment, and it's just not here. Swallow one of these twice a day.
Yeah. Well, again, questions are welcome. If you have some issue that you'd, some health issue having to do with kids that you'd like to talk about, that's what we're here to do. And we've been doing that once a month for quite a long time with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. And it could be, you know, the kind of things you could talk about with pediatrician, could be behavioral issues, could be development, could have to do with basic childhood illness, wellness, you know, whatever you have on your mind you'd like to talk with him. Can be for your children or to the children in your life. All you have to do is call us 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here, someone listening this morning in Indiana, and it's on our toll free line. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to agree with practically all the things you said about dealing with children. My significant other is bipolar, manic depressive, and she couldn't make it without the biochemical stuff, that's for sure, and the psychiatric stuff, usually twice a month, is extremely important. And this started with her when she was 7. She was sexually abused for about 5 years, and tearing apart that there's no trauma with the family to the biochemical, I can agree with that. But what bothers me is what bothered you, that we have regular GPs or you know, doing this. And my friend psychiatrist is in his early 70s. He's done it all, taught at the big schools, taught at the small schools, and then the private stuff, and now in the public stuff, and now he's sort of going on, he's out, you know, before he retires, settled down in a small town where I'm from that's, you know, a nice place. It sort of concerns me, the terms of the marketplace, I guess I best put it. In the malls and the place where I'm walking around, I see a lot of children being cuffed on the head, you know, more or less made to straighten up with a violent approach, though it may not be, you know, like getting somebody with a hammer, but certainly violent to hit some small child on the head with your hand. The marketplace in terms of McDonald's and Hardee's, and now even in the school systems where they got to make money by selling 600-calorie sandwiches and drinks, you know, up to around 160, 180 calories and that sort of thing. And the culture we're in, that's probably not ever going to change because entrepreneurs are, you know, put on a very high pedestal here no matter what the outcome is down the line. And I guess the next comment is, I know that they often use nurses and interns for long-range studies. I know you have a university school there, and I presume it's like the one I went to in Bloomington where the Department of Education uses to check out new views on methodology and things like that. It would be nice if we could follow some children. Wouldn't have to follow them outside the community because a lot of those kids are going to stay within that community to get some sort of data that could have some sort of sense of whether the suicide rate is really up and whether depression is really up, or it's just a matter of now that we've paid attention to it and some of the aberrations that occur are being seen more easily now. If you could comment on that or, you know, whatever. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
You know, I have trouble with many. First thing, the schools are getting concerned, and a lot of them are leaving, are excluding soft drinks from the cafeteria, even though it does cost them some money. But there is concern about the obesity in that. And it's a lot of school districts are doing things a little bit better. And, you know, you have to eat lunch in the lunchroom. You can't go to the pop machine and get a pop and an ice cream. So that's a good thing. I think one of the things that concerns me about all these mental health diagnoses is you make the diagnosis, it's the DSM-4. You know, if you got 6 symptoms from column A and 4 symptoms from column B, this is the diagnosis and this is the medication you belong on. And I guess that, you know, who's to measure these things and say, okay, you've got 1 inch or 1 gram too much hyperactivity that makes you abnormal. And I think the other thing often is we don't look into the family situation and the situation this child lives in that may be causing some of these. Certainly, if the mother has an abusive boyfriend, the child's probably going to be anxious and may manifest hyperactivity, and the treatment then is not a stimulant medication, but the treatment is to try and alter this child's family situation. So, yeah, the diagnosis concerned me that they're thrown around a little bit too freely without enough background research and not enough figuring out what's going on, or is this child inattentive because they have a vision problem and they can't see what's on the blackboard, or is this child inattentive and goofing around because there's a hearing problem and this child can't hear what's going on so decides to amuse himself. Usually it's, again, for attention deficit disorder, it's himself. I frequently had parents say, my kid seems kind of depressed. How long has this been going on? Well, this has been going on ever since grandfather died. And you say, how long ago did grandfather die? Well, he died 2 weeks ago. Well, you know what? This child should be depressed. I mean, the fact that this child is unhappy and sad is a sign that the grieving process is going on normally, and please keep me informed. If this lasts too long, then we say the grieving process is not proceeding normally, and then perhaps intervention ought to go in. But, I don't think you want to put a child who's grieving over a lost grandparent or parent on Prozac, because I don't think it'd be healthy to deny this child his grief process. And I think we really need to, do more than 6 of column A and 4 of column B. We really need to say, all right, again, it's like every other problem in medicine. We need a history and physical. We need a full history and physical. And, maybe it is. And I do believe that some of these are pure biochemical disorders and just need their biochemistry straightened out with a medication. But I think that's few of them. I think most of them have, like your significant other had, sexual abuse for several years. I think oftentimes there's other things going on than a pure hereditary biochemical disorder.
Well, we have some other folks to talk with. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician. He is with us every month, always a Thursday, to take questions on children's health. And then we just kind of open it up to whatever kind of questions people have. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We have another caller here in Urbana in line one.
Howdy.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I'd like to make some comments that you may not have addressed or may have forgotten since you were a kid. I wonder how much adults actually remember from their childhoods, because even when you're a kid, you can see how much the adults don't understand what's going on in your head. Going to school was terrifying to almost all the kids that I knew, and they didn't divide up the teachers they were coming up into as average or a little better than average or worse than average. They're very simple-minded, these little kids, and they're just teachers labeled are the good ones and the bad ones.
Yes.
So
she's
half
mean.
Of you, half yeah. of the kids go into a class where they think they got a bad one, and they're terrified. They just don't think about them being different. It's just they hear the reputation, and it's either okay, I'm going to get a good one, you might be disappointed, but half of them think they're going in there with Hitler.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're, a square peg getting pounded into a round hole until somebody convinces them otherwise. A lot of this stuff just seems really obvious to kids, and they look you, it's why they look you in the eye with that funny look when you talk to them sometimes. It's because they know you have no memory of when you were that age, And as far as the inattention goes, I think that goes in the same column. You never mentioned boredom.
Yeah. Yes.
School is boring.
But You know, and I guess the other thing, now that, you know, I run into, I'm retired, so I run into parents who, well, their children are now not children anymore. They've made it through college. And these were kids that, you know, you've had on Ritalin and you just, you know, you hope this kid didn't make it to the penitentiary, you know, because that's where you felt they were heading, or that's the message you got from the schools where they're heading. And often these kids get out of school and get into college or get into a vocational school and just soar with the eagles. And you say, what's going on? Why did we have so much difficulty getting this kid through high school, and they get to college and they soar like the eagle? Well, yeah, you know, you say, okay, in college they have more choice. They can elect courses in their area of interest. But you say, boy, freshman year of college, I took Ret 101, and yeah, I didn't have many elective courses. And I think we do need to say, what are we doing to our kids in school? And I think you're absolutely right. Okay, you know, yeah, I got a mean teacher this year because, you know, I heard from my friend last year that she's really mean, so I'm a little anxious about class. I don't feel terribly comfortable out at recess because, you know, I don't know if somebody's going to bang me with a baseball bat, or, you know, there's bullying going on in school. And I think bullying's not new. Bullying's been going on, well, since Cain and Abel, we know. So I don't think that's new, and bullying does go on, and I think it's important that we try and deal with it, but I really don't think we're going to stop it. So okay, I'm out of the classroom with the mean teacher, but now I'm on the recess with the mean kids. Okay, I'm at lunch. Well, you know, I really don't want to eat meatloaf. I'd rather have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And not only that, there's somebody beating the drum in the lunchroom saying, hurry up and eat, get out for lunch recess. In fact, I really don't care if you eat or not. Just clean up your plate and get out of the lunchroom and go have fun at recess. Well, except that at recess, I have to worry about the bully. So I think you're absolutely right. Our kids are... school isn't always a comfortable experience, and I think we need to, I don't know what we need to do, but I think, yeah, we need to try and make it a more comfortable experience. And I think you're right. Kids are stressed, and I think...
Am I still on there with you?
Yes.
I'm not sure that a lot of the people ever believe what the bullying is that's going on. I can't say as I have ever had a kid tell me they went and reported bullying with any kind of a satisfactory response. I can't say I was in more than one fight in grade school or junior high school or high school, but I can tell you that the bullying only stopped when I punched somebody really hard right in the nose.
Yeah.
It never stopped because I told anybody. And just, you know, once every 5 years or something, you got to just cock it back and whack them. And today, you're told you're a bad guy for doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, and except I'm not exactly sure what the schools are supposed to do about it. That's a problem that I don't have the foggiest idea what the schools are supposed to do about bullying, except, yeah, know that it's there, intervene where they can. And, yeah, when you punch the bully in the nose... I suppose you shouldn't have punched him in the nose. I suppose you deserve to go to the principal's office and get chewed on for a little bit, but I'm not sure you deserve a 3-day suspension.
Well, I did go to the principal's office, but he was very understanding about it. I have to give him a serious 100 points. He had to write down that he administered corporal punishment, but he just barely whacked my knuckles with a ruler. You know, I didn't understand. I was very young at the time. It took me a long time to figure out exactly what happened in that situation.
Well, yeah.
But I explained to him all the details. Listen, you got 3 other callers, so you got to get them in there. But I really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Well,
thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go on to, we do indeed have another caller here, Bloomington, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I guess along the school lines again, you had mentioned earlier about boys and girls developing differently and so on, and it just seems like, of course, they can't help it, but the school system has to, you know, throw them all in the same mold, and some fail and some make it. But I know, like in my case with math as an example, that I just couldn't make it through math or anything for almost my whole school experience. But my daughter, who we homeschool, you know, few years ago when she's like 10 years old, she asked me to help her on some math problem she did. I'm looking at her going, goodness. And I said, I didn't say anything to her or anything, but I told my wife later on, I said, did she realize she's doing trig? And she said, no, they don't label it that way. She just does it. She doesn't like it, but she does it, you know. But I was just like, you know, she can, you know, the girls certainly could catch on as much as they wanted to early on. But, you know, like in my case at least, you know, there's, you know, the boys have a hard time catching on to that stuff in early parts and so on, you know.
Well, I think the other thing we have to realize is, yes, some people are gifted. Some people read like anything, and some people do math like anything, and some people kind of don't catch on to things as fast as others, which doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. They just don't excel at that particular field. Let's give these kids an individual attention, see how their brain best works, where their gifts are, and let's see if we can't get reading, you know, if we can't make reading math to a certain extent or go to the way their brains, their wiring works best.
Yeah, and my 3-year-old daughter, of course, she hangs around the 13-year-old a lot, she talks, she has a vocabulary that you just wouldn't believe. And, I mean, you know, sometimes she gets some things different being a 3-year-old, but the words that she uses already, and I was thinking, you know, when I was that age, I was just making truck noises.
Yeah.
You know? And a side thing, my older daughter, my 13-year-old, you were her doctor back when she was little, and she had a hard time getting a handle on your name. And it was a funny thing because she couldn't say Bocek, but how little kids are sometimes, they twist things around. She kept saying Dr. Checkbook.
Yeah, okay, I remember you, you know, and Dr. I always Checkbook. Wondered what you had to say about me because your child kept calling me Dr. Checkbook. I thought,
no. Loved you as a doctor. We thought, well, that's cute. Let's leave it that way.
You know, it works. And yeah, I didn't mind that at all. It worked.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. We have a couple of minutes left here. If somebody else wants to call in real quick, you can do that. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-WILL, 9455. You want to talk with Dr. Robert Checkbook, our pediatrician here. Listen, there are people around here who still, as many years as you've been coming here, they still don't get your name. So let's see. What you should do is you work real hard on your math skills, because if you don't, you might end up being a public radio talk show host, and you don't want that. Tell your kids, look, you're going to end up like this guy if you don't work hard on your math, because I still don't get math, never did.
You know, and I think, that what we've talked about is all kids aren't the same, and certainly kids aren't little adults. They're at their own developmental stage, and all babies don't roll over at the same time. And I think kids need individual attention. You know, and I do have some bones with the educational system, although I understand the immense problems they've got too. They've got to, you know, get all these. They've got to mass educate kids who aren't all at the same. Aren't all at the same developmental level, don't have all the same gifts. So it is a heart. You know, I've said bad things about the educational system, and to a certain extent, the educational system deserves it. To a great extent, the educational system doesn't. I think we've underfunded them as a society, and I think we've told them to do the best you can, but you know, this is the funding you get. This is the assets you have to work with.
Well, we got a couple callers here. We'll see if we can get at least one, if not both. Champagne, next line one. Hello.
He just mentioned what I was going to say. Thanks for taking my call. I think that you hit the nail on the head. The education system's totally underfunded, and they do the best they can. Trying to get the best teachers they can and not offer a salary that's decent for them. But that's all I wanted to say. Thanks so much.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. We'll go to Mattoon then for someone else here. Line four. Hello.
Hi. I also appreciate the comments you just made on development. Kind of addresses one, it's not really a concern, but just kind of a curiosity. I have twin granddaughters that are not quite 17 months old. They were born 6 weeks early. And although they're very verbal, they really don't have words. They're not speaking words. And I'm just wondering if that's typical on kids that age or what.
Okay. If they're 17 months old and they were 16, or they're 6 weeks early, so in essence they're only 15 months old. And yeah, the 18-month-old, I think, as I recall, is supposed to have a vocabulary of 5 or 6 words.
Okay.
So that's, you know, and that includes mama, dada, and bow wow for dog, so they don't have, yeah.
All right.
They don't have to be words, you know, it could be a sound that goes with an object, like a dog's not a dog, a dog's a bow wow.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. Yeah, that counts.
All righty, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Well, I guess we're almost, pretty much, we have to finish up. Something you'd like to
leave? Yeah, the other thing about the 17, 18-month-old, if they don't have words, what is their verbal comprehension? Do they understand what's going on? And that, you have to factor. If they don't have words and they don't have verbal comprehension, then you get worried. If they have good verbal comprehension and their vocabulary is a little late developing, you're concerned but a little less concerned.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for being
with us. Thank you. My pleasure.
Dr. Robert Bocek, he's a pediatrician. He's with us every month, always on Thursday. We talk about children's health, and he'll be back next month. Programming here on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. A little later today on the Afternoon Magazine, a chance to ask questions about computers. It's a program that they do every month. They call it Computers and You. It's always on the third Thursday, and the guest this month will be the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. So if you're having some problems or have other questions about computers, you can call in. In the next hour of this show, we'll be talking with Dr. Marianne Vanderveld. She's a psychologist. She is also founder of the Institute for Couples in Retirement, and that's what we'll be talking about, retirement for two, and some of the difficult kind of emotional challenges that couples may face. It may actually surprise them if they've been married for a long time. But retirement is different. We'll talk about that in the next part of the show. First, though, we'll take a break for news and update on the market, so stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come.
And with this update on the markets coming up on 10:59, I'm Jay Pierce. Good morning. Well, wheat on the Chicago Board of Trade seeing some gains following improved export sales. Corn seeing some gains on early frost concerns, and soybeans down a bit, mostly on weather and fund selling. The September wheat contract currently up 4.75 at 306.5. December at 320.5 is up 5. September corn 227 up 1.5. December 238.25 up 2.